blowing into it. It would make a big noise. Is that? It's such a soft noise. Is this one of those things that like triggers boys' brains? Okay. such a ruckus. All right, everyone, calm down. All right, so now I'm going to talk about how to make extensions that actually make sense within Wave. It's as James pointed out, it's not terribly difficult to actually make a robot and make a gadget. I would argue it's actually is somewhat difficult to make a robot that really is truly wavy and takes advantage of the full environment that it's in and is intuitive for users to understand within the Wave environment. Because the thing about Wave itself is that Wave isn't all that intuitive for users yet, right? I mean, it's a completely new thing, right? We've been using collaborative stuff for, you know, a few years now, so we're getting kind of used to that, even though every collaborative thing works in a different way, and, you know, wikis lock differently than docs do, and than sites, etc. So users are kind of getting used to the collaborative thing, but Wave is even more different than all of that. So this is about, you know, how you make extensions that really fit inside that environment, and it's somewhat not obvious, I guess. So once again, I'm going to talk in terms of robots and gadgets. I should point out that robots and gadgets, they're not completely independent things. Most sophisticated robots actually do include gadgets for some visual component of their robot, but you can somewhat distinguish them when you're talking about a lot of stuff. So gadgets, like I said before, the point of gadgets is to be able to have not just text collaboration in the way. It's being able to have all sorts of other collaboration using, you know, visual metaphors. So for example, if we had a mission to defeat zombies, all right, which is the kind of thing that you run into a lot when using Wave. There's a lot of people out there trying to kill zombies. So here we have the Wave where they're planning the mission, right? You know, storm Government Island. First, we have the locations that they want to storm. There's the weather so that you know whether to wear a jacket when you're killing the zombies, which is really important. And a list of people that are going to volunteer. I've graciously put myself on the list. Now, that's all well and good. But this whole Wave would be infinitely better if it was using gadgets for a lot of this information. Because something like those locations, those are much better visualized on a map here. Like now when you look at this, now you really know where you're going to go after those zombies, right? You can see kill zone 1, kill zone 2, kill zone 3, different marked points where you're going to have little ports. You can see the weather, immediately look at that and you know what it is, right? It's cloudy, with it's basically Wellington. and then we've got the list of people that are going to volunteer, and now we know that somebody actually is thinking about volunteering. They're on the maybe list, right? So this is really the power of gadgets, is being able to bring a lot more meaning to something by making it visual and by allowing kinds of collaboration that you couldn't do with simply text. So when you're making a gadget, what you need to do is make sure that it retains all the same characteristics that the textual collaboration in Wave has, right? So one of those characteristics is the fact that multiple users are editing at once, right? And so when multiple users are editing the text at once, you actually see their cursors. So you'll see basically there's Austin and Vadim editing, and we see it says Austin in orange. Do I zoom in here? Yep. So we see Austin in orange. We see Vadim in green. You can read this story really fast. It's actually really funny. And so I immediately know when I'm looking at this that, number one, there are two other people on the Wave that are doing the editing, and I know exactly where they are in the Wave. So when you're making a gadget, see, you're still reading. When you're making a gadget, it's important that you can try and communicate who else is interacting with the gadget, editing that gadget, and where they are inside that gadget. And for gadget space, it can mean something a little bit non-obvious. All right. A great example of this is the Sudoku gadget. So Sudoku gadget will actually show the squares that each person is in, right? So right now, this is me, Lars, and Dan playing. So Lars is in the green square, I'm in that orange square, and Dan is in the purple square. Notice how my square has a number in it? That's because I'm better than them. Oh, yeah, good job. I don't even know how to play Sudoku. I just put random numbers in it and mentioned they're right. It's great. No. I do know how, but I prefer crosswords. If anyone makes a crossword gadget for Wave, I will worship you. All right. So anyway, so this is a great example of it. You know how many people are in that gadget, and you know where they are. And they've even colored it and given a legend. Legends are always important. All right. Now, something else about the Wave is that there's multiple people editing it, but each of them has a slightly different view because the Wave client is customized towards the fact that they're viewing it, right? So this is kind of subtle when you're doing textual collaboration, but when you're doing that, you actually see they both have these rounded corners with their names, but where is our location? Our location is where the cursor is. So when I'm looking to see where I am in the Wave, I just immediately go to where the cursor is. Granted, it's a tiny little line, but eventually you come to recognize it. So this is an example of customizing it so that the viewer knows what information is important to them. So you can do this in gadgets as well. So here's the like-dislike gadget that we saw earlier. So when I click like, it actually says, you like this. So this is great because immediately when I look at that gadget, I think, aha, I know what my current state in that gadget is. I don't have to search around to figure out what my state is, right? So you should try and do this when possible. I think we have another... The Sudoku gadget also does something like this where it shows a big area with your score, because what you care about most is probably your score, and then the other people's scores are presented differently. So you should try to, you know, customize information so that it helps the viewer. And it's pretty easy in the gadgets API. You can check who the current viewer is and then decide what you want to do with that information. All right, the other thing about Wave is that there's actually multiple modes. I've got my little widget up here. I should probably try and hide that. No, whatever. All right, so there's multiple modes. So you've got a mode where you're viewing a Wave, and you've got a mode where you're editing a Wave. And this change in modes is actually pretty important, because when you're editing a Wave, that's when all your state changes happen, when all your changes to the document model happen. When you're viewing a Wave, technically, you're not supposed to be touching that document at all, right? So technically, you can view a Wave, and no one should know you're ever there. But this is important because this is how email works, right? When you view an email, generally, nobody knows that you've viewed that email, right? And so Wave has kind of respected that privacy model of email. We may have stuff in the future where you can actually enable people to know that you're viewing it, and I think there's a fair use case for that as well. But right now we're kind of in the privacy mode of email, which is a bit on the safer side. So the edit view distinction is important because it's only in edit mode when you should be doing anything that is shared with the rest of the world. In view mode, everything you do should be personal to you and only reflected for you. So, and there's also a difference in what the UI looks like. So in edit mode, we've got our cursor, we've got the editing toolbar at the top that has all of our style stuff. And edit mode for a gadget can actually look pretty similar. So this is edit mode for the map gadget. And you see I've got the editing toolbar on the bottom, all the text boxes are actually input fields, and this is very clearly editing mode where everything I do is affecting the shared state. So even when I move the map, that's actually affecting the shared state. Now we go to view mode for text, and you can see we've lost our editing toolbar, our cursor changes, there's no longer a little blinky line. We go to view mode for the map, we immediately lose the toolbar, all the text goes to static text, and now we can actually zoom around the map, and nobody else will see that state change. This was actually really important for the map gadget, because when we first had gadgets, we didn't have a distinction. So every time in our early map gadget, every time somebody would pan the map or zoom the map, the Wave would update for everyone. And people were not happy about this at all. Right? Like, I mean, gadgets already have a problem where they do update the state a lot, and it's not always clear what they're doing. But for panning around a map, it's definitely a use case where there's the pans you want to share, and there are the pans you don't want to share, right? When you're going to check out the stripper or whatever. So edit view mode is something to think about in your gadget, and whether it makes sense to have an edit mode and a view mode, and, you know, hopefully it does. We're still kind of wrapping our head around it, but basically you can register for a mode callback, which tells you when the main blip has changed from view to edit, and then you can change your UI depending on what that callback has told you. All right, so now let's go to robots. So robots are different from Gadget. Robots are, you know, basically, Wave is great because you get to share your waves with human participants. But the thing about human participants is that they're slow and they're dumb, right? They don't integrate with APIs, right? Like if I could, I have a few APIs, but human participants are great for giving human feedback, but there's a lot of things that you really don't need humans for. In fact, you don't want humans to do that for. There's a lot of things that you want a computer to do, right? Ways that they can help your conversation along. Why have a human do it when a program can't? Have the humans respond, you know, in the human way, with their, you know, well thought out, slow responses. So for example, if I'm chatting with my friend Austin and I ask him a few questions, right? I think Austin's, you know, really smart. I say, what is Google Wave? Search enabled Google Microwave. What is life? Life equals 2 times life minus no life. And the meaning of life is to drink beer. These are clearly not great answers, and it took him forever to respond, like 30 minutes to tell me that the meaning of life is to drink beer. Ridiculous, right? All these questions probably better answered by a robot. So this is the Bingy bot. So in fact, the Bing API seems to be fairly decent. So we have, what is Google Wave? What is life? What is the meaning of life? And you know, these are immediate responses. I get them like 2 seconds after I write that in there. So this isn't necessarily the kind of robot that you want on all your things, but it just demonstrates the fact that robots can be fast. They can integrate with other APIs. They can be smart. No comments. I didn't write BingyBot. I probably wrote maybe like a third of the stuff you'll see, but BingyBot was just a random one from the samples gallery, so no comment. All right. So the other thing about, so now we'll go into more details on robots. So one of the big things is the real-time response. So there's a lot of different events that you can listen to on a wave. You can listen to the blip submitted, which we saw before. You can listen to find out when participants were changed. But you can also listen to document change, which is basically every time the document changes. Now, it's not going to send every character, because it doesn't actually do it that way. It'll probably be like every 4 characters. I don't have any idea. But basically, it's as they're typing, right? So the ideal is actually to respond as people are typing, right? So that if there's some way you can help them, they know that immediately. Right? Like, why should they have to type out a whole address if your robot can auto-complete it for them, right? They shouldn't have to submit a blip and say that they're done in order to get that help. So, for example, here we have a smiley robot, which is a popular robot. It's amazing how important smileys are to people. Like, you don't understand, I've seen about 20 emoticon bots, and half of our feature requests are just to enable better smiley bots. But here we go, I'm typing. I type a colon, I type a parentheses, and then it instantly turns into a little unicorn smiley. I should turn into a snowman. I like snowmen more now. But basically, this is the ideal, right? Respond as you type. And the way to do that would have been, that would be backwards. Register for the document changed event. As the document is changing, find what's relevant to you and change it. And you ideally want to mark that you've already processed that so that you don't go and reprocess it again. Now, the thing about listening to document change is that that means a whole lot more bandwidth on your App Engine app, which, you know, means more money for us. But there's ways to get around that. So we actually have filters that you can specify, right? So if you only care about when there's a smiley face or what looks like a smiley face on the blip, you could say, just tell me when the document change involves this information, right? And we're introducing a bunch of new events in the new API, like annotation change, gadget change, all of that, so that you can both react as soon as possible while also not wasting your App Engine bandwidth, because we don't actually want you to spend App Engine bandwidth to make robots. Yep. Yeah. The question is, if you start getting lots of operations and you're not responding fast enough, you should still get every event. I don't think App Engine wouldn't stop receiving them. You would still get them. They won't get grouped, no. Maybe we could. But that's why it's important to mark what you've processed and stuff, like, so that you don't reprocess and stuff like that. But so we're working on more fine-grained event. We're working on filters. But the idea is to respond as fast as you can to the things that are relevant to your robot, right? That's the general principle. All right, the other thing about robots, or the thing about Wave, is that Wave is collaborative, right? It's not just you on the Wave. It's you, it's your mom, it's your dad, whoever is collaborating on the Wave together. And then it's robots as well. And you may have more than one robot on a Wave, right? So you can never assume that your robot is going to be the only one on the Wave. You can't assume it's going to be the only person on the Wave. You should always make your robot be as friendly as possible with anybody else that's there and work with up to 900 people on the Wave, right? That's the ideal in Wave, that you should just be able to have as many participants and it still works. So I'll show you an example of a bad robot, which is the first one I wrote. So this is Cartoony. I actually dressed up as Cartoony for Halloween. I didn't win the Halloween contest. I'm really bitter. But anyway, so what Cartoony does is that it takes the text in your blip and immediately replaces the entire text with an image. All right, and the image is it's generated from the Google Charts API, and it's just a bubble that contains your text. I thought it was super cute because now I'm like, conversations look really bubbly and colored. I calculated colors for usernames and stuff like that. But the thing about this robot is that as soon as you added it to any conversation, it turned every single blip into an image, which means you've lost your text. No other robot can operate on that text. No, the humans can't go back and edit their text because it's gone forever. It was basically the least collaborative robot ever. And people started to hate it. There were entire like threads about how much they hated Cartoony, right? Yeah, oops. This is how I forced things to get implemented. Yeah, so we have these threads about people talking about like speculating making a Cartoony killer and stuff like that, and gave it the nickname Conversation Killer. We actually did end up adding the ability to remove participants, and it might have been related. Yeah, remove robot participants. Yep. So the question is, what is the locking model? And we don't, so the whole thing of OT is that we don't need a locking model, right? So if I have a robot that, so that's just going to be, I think, whichever one gets. So basically, so that's going to do, so that one did a delete and an insert, and yours would do a delete and an insert. I reckon you'd get two smileys. I think that's what it's going to do. Because basically, so OT is insert, deletes. The deletes would be the same on the same chunk, and then you'd have two inserts and get two smileys. So that's actually the ideal, because then the user gets two smileys and they pick between them, right? So Wave, the way OT works, it errs on the side of giving you, more, and then letting the humans kind of decide, like, well, that was actually an extra character. I'd already typed it, and he typed it too. I'll just get rid of this, right? So it tends to work out all right, but so ideally, if you use stuff like annotation setting, usually when you set annotations, that's kind of the most collaborative way you can work because you don't affect the text at all. It's basically, the best thing is just to make the robot try and combine it with other ones and see what happens, right? And see how people react. Now here's an example of two robots that were just incredibly like synergistic and weren't even developed together. So we have Monty and Syntaxy. Monty is a Python evaluator. Syntaxy is a syntax highlighter. So Monty takes the text in a blip and it sends it through a compiler and responds with a result. Syntaxy takes the text in a blip, sends it through a highlighter, and then sets annotations back on the text. So what happens, if I enter some Python code, Syntaxy sees it, it sets the color annotations, and then Python's Monty sees it and ends up with the result. So these two work perfectly together without even having to know about each other from the beginning, right? And it's because Syntaxy doesn't affect the text at all. This is the beauty of separating the text from the style, right? Because Syntaxy, all it has to do is modify those style annotations and not touch the text at all. And then Monty never sees, never looks at those annotations at all. So this is the kind of the idea. So that's the cool thing about robots, is that when you write them correctly, you actually end up with these synergistic robots that do more than, you know, what they were originally intended to do when they're combined with other ones. All right, so now we have natural triggers. So the thing about WAVE is that it is actually about, as much as I talk about humans being lame and stuff, it is about, you know, conversing with humans and conversing in your human language, right? Because we launched it developers first, a lot of us kind of look at it as like a command line that's in DHTML. We're like, yeah, just write some commands. But it's really intended for having natural conversations, right? I would say with my mom and my dad, but they're both programmers, so my brother. He's a bouncer. So he should bounce my robot. All right, so you want to have your robot respond to natural human conversation. A lot of robots have, because it's easier, they've come up with this command line kind of syntax, right? So this one, you specify slash map and then an address, and the robot sees it, and it inserts a map gadget with that address. And it, you know, it works, and it's cool, but it's not good to have a syntax for a particular robot, right? Because what happens if there's one robot that responds to slash map, there's another robot that responds to colon map, the human wants to use both of them, right? Or what are they going to write? There's no way that they can now use both of these robots together. So it's unintuitive and it's uncollaborative to have a special syntax for a robot. Granted, it's hella easier because we can all parse out, you know, a pattern in the input, but it doesn't mean you should do it. So the ideal is to have natural triggers. So we saw the GeoBot earlier, right? It can actually look at the text, analyze the text, find the addresses. So that means, you know, it doesn't have to look for a particular syntax. You can add it on any wave that happens to have addresses, and it's going to convert those addresses, right? Now, unfortunately, you know, it's a little trickier to do stuff like that. But there are APIs that people are developing for doing semantic analysis. There's an Amazon and an eBay bot that use, named entity analysis to figure out what the likely product names are in a wave. And they go and they go through a wave and they link likely product names to results on Amazon and stuff like that. So there's ways of doing this natural parsing depending on what your robot does. Let me actually show you some other options though. If you don't have the ability of syntax, and this is where I have to scroll because I didn't set my path correctly. All right. So sometimes you're not going to be able to do you're not going to be able to, you know, analyze the text and find the entities, but you don't want to specify syntax. So there's a couple other options you can do. One of them is actually have the user select the text and click a toolbar icon. So here I selected that text there, clicked a toolbar icon, and that actually linked the text to the first result on Google. So that's a nice UI. People are used to the idea of selecting and then clicking a button to do something. And what this basically, how this works is that you specify that you're listening, that you want a certain annotation key to be set when somebody clicks your toolbar icon. And then when your robot gets called, it just looks for the annotation key and says, oh, right, I'm going to process that. It processes it, marks it as processed, and goes on. So you can do some nice things with that, right? Like if I wanted a code compiling bot, I could actually have it select the code, click compile, and it would just go and compile all of that code right there. Now, another option, I don't know, Dan, I have regex in here, is that okay? Talk about it. This is something that you can't do as a developer yet, but maybe, I think we talked about it, like in the future you should be able to, and it's something that we do already for our YouTube gadget. So when you paste a URL into a wave, you get a little light bulb, and when you click on the light bulb, it says embed video. So basically what it's doing there is a regex. It's looking to see like, oh, I saw a YouTube video and I know that I can do stuff with YouTube videos. I'm going to offer these options after the YouTube video, right? And then when you click that, it goes and embeds the YouTube video there. So we're going to expose this to developers so that you can actually say, well, I'm looking for this regex and I want to offer this option when they click it, all right? So that's cool because that works really well for stuff like when you want to, you know, if you're processing Twitter URLs, IMDb URLs, all sorts of, there's so many, you know, URLs. And then even stuff like smileys, right? You type a smiley you get a little thing, convert to smiley, right? And that's cool because you could actually combine multiple, if multiple emoticon bots both use this thing, you could have convert to super conservative smiley or convert to super funky smiley. So that's good because you're giving the user options about how you're going to convert their input. And we don't even have any talk about doing this, but it's another example of what our client does. The basic idea is, you know, giving users options about how you're going to process their stuff. So when you make a spelling mistake, you get a little drop-down that gives you spelling alternatives or what we think is correct, and then you can go and select a spelling alternative. So maybe in the future we'll expose this to developers as well, so you could have like a definition thing or a thesaurus one where you could pick a similar word, something like that. I don't know, but the basic idea is different ways of triggering your robot and different ways of letting users specify what your robot should be actually processing. How am I for time? Am I like super? I'm fine. Okay, I just wanted to talk briefly about games. Do you guys like games? Yes, okay. All right, so I actually think games are, a lot of people are excited about making games in Wave. But I think that there's some additional things to consider when you're porting a game over from a traditional environment to Wave. So the first thing is the fact that you have multiple participants. All right, so I see a lot of people who submit gadgets that are basically, there's one player and there's two players, and you say, oh, I'm player one and I'm player two. This isn't good, because I go and I visit the sample Wave, and I'm like, man, I can't play because I was player three and this game has no room for player three. Alright, so the thing about when you're porting a game is that you should try, I know a lot of games are, you know, one person against one person, but you could do something like having people choose what team they're on within a Wave, right? So Othello, instead of being player one against player two, it could be team one against team two, and when I join the Wave, I say, alright, I'm on team one, right? And so that's really cool because it means that any time if somebody from team one is online, they can go and they can take their turn then. Because the other thing to remember about Wave versus normal game environments is that Wave is both real time, but also delayed time, right? You can have a very fast conversation in Wave, or you can come back to a Wave months later and type in that conversation, right? So that's something to remember for games too. People aren't going to be necessarily glued to the screen playing this game for 10 minutes straight. They might be playing the game very fast, you know, for 5 minutes, and then they actually get back to work, and then they come back later, right? So you should try and structure your game in a way that it's fun for people to play it at any pace. So I think that actually works really well with having teams, because then whoever happens to be online at that time maybe gets to participate in the game can move faster, right? So you should try and have multiple participants. Sudoku is a good example that has multiple participants. You guys should like this one. Can you tell what it is? Yeah. This is written by one of our, you know, high schooler prodigy kids, 16 years old, 14 years old, something like that. Yeah, it's really cool because actually it paints your thumbnail as little squares. So you can see my thumbnail is the kind of more colorful one. And then you can see your thumbnail like growing and changing and stuff. But this is cool because this is for, you know, any number of participants. And this isn't like a real game. but it's still the idea of having multiple participants. This one's kind of more of a game, is my boxes, and anyone can click, and then there's a certain number of boxes that somebody else can click, and you keep going until the whole game is filled. And then did I get I don't think I got the Zork screenshot. Oh, I did. So the Zork robot is really cool because I used to TA a history of games class, which meant like I spent a lot of time downloading old games and trying them out. I tried to play Zork back then on the command line, and I just had no idea what to do, even, you know, when reading the cheat manual, and I couldn't get anywhere, and I thought Zork was just really super lame. It might be, but with the Zork robot, the cool thing is I can play this with multiple people that are in the Wave, and I'll try something, and then they'll try something, and then we'll all try something else, and then we'll do a private reply, and we'll say, like, all right, what should we try next? So this is really cool, because we've turned this, like, very simple command line game into something that's collaborative, and actually becomes a lot more fulfilling when it is collaborative, because there's multiple people trying stuff out against the system, and you can actually make a lot more progress, right? So this actually makes the game more rewarding for me. You can actually see this live here. So James, I don't think James is in the audience right now, but James was attempting various things And then Chris suggested a safety dance. None of these, this is kind of our silly part of it. Because it turns out that Zork does not accept the command safety dance or dance like sexy monkey. But it's pretty cool. So the fact about this Zork robot is that any number of people could play, and we could go back to it at any time and continue the game on. So when you're thinking of porting games over, think about the pace of the game, think about the participants, think about what it's going to be like when somebody is not on the wave for a while, or when people are on it, you know, together and all interacting very fast. You have to think about all these things, and think also how you can use wave to actually make the game more fun than its original. Because I think that there's a lot of potential for games on wave, but that perhaps it's non-obvious what they should look like. And so we're, you know, kind of experimenting and finding that stuff out. All right, so that's what I wanted to talk about. I am done. Questions? Yeah.
Sorry. I got reminded of it because of the whole game thing.
Yeah.
But my understanding is, like, waves are forever, and all the changes are forever because you can do the whole playback thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of limiting with games? Because that means that every single iteration of a game, like every single time someone plays Sudoku, it's, like, saved, you know, on Google servers or whatever, like, forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the related questions is, you know, while that's true for things like, you know, wikis, even Wikipedia has had to have, you know, someone puts, like, copyright infringing material, so they have to have a way of permanently excising information, which is sort of counter to the information is there forever thing. And I'm sort of curious how that interacts with things like games and the whole, things and waves are last forever.
So I think there are two questions there. The first is about, you know, games and storing information forever. I actually think it's really cool because now with these games, you can actually play them back and see exactly how they played out. And it can look really cool for something like an Othello game, like seeing the pieces move, Flooded, Game of Life. Being able to play all that back, I think, is really, really cool. Now, I would argue that I'm not sure if it's clear yet whether, for like Sudoku game, whether you should be playing multiple games in a wave, or if a wave should simply represent one round of the game. I think that's something, you know, we're still trying to figure out, like, because a wave is a document, but, you know, in game land, is a document one play of a game or every play of a game? I think it's probably one play, so probably theoretically you should only have one play of that, but, you know, you can do lots of ways. And then the other question is just generally about, you know, being able to excise information out of the wave, and I'm going to give that question to Dan.
Yes, you need to be able to delete things. That's really the whole of the answer to this stage. We don't have delete, and we need to be able to let people delete things as appropriate. I don't know the preciseness of our plans around that. I know that it's actually got some similarities to remove participant, because when you think about it, falling off of a wave is sort of like deleting it from your index, and so that's how they're connected. But the idea with remove participant is if you ever loaded the wave, if you get removed from it, you should still have a snapshot of what you had before, because otherwise we've just taken information away from you because somebody decided to take you off the wave, and that seems bad. That makes it a little complicated, especially because you should be able to get added back onto the wave. So now you understand why delete is starting to get very difficult. So there is a further complication of ACLs, but even without access control lists, it's still complicated. So. Other questions? Hey, PFox, do you want to elaborate a little bit on extension manifest files and them being both? And then, but while you're walking back there.
Extension manifest.
Just you mentioned before,
we actually haven't shown extension manifests at all. Right, so there's robots and gadgets, but then they're packaged up in a extension manifest, which just really specifies how somebody installs it. It's similar to, like, I guess, app manifests and, Chrome extensions. So let me get an example of that. So the samples gallery is where we store the majority of our samples here. So here's an example of Wavelinker. And I showed this, basically you select the text, you click the button, and it links that text to the first result on Google. So the extension manifest for this, what it looks like is that we've got the extension, so we've got a name and description for it, a thumbnail with the author, and then we have hooks and we have actions. So the hooks kind of specify where they're going to be triggered, and the action is what's going to happen when that hook is triggered, right? So right now the hooks you have are the toolbar and the new Wave menu. So you can actually have something in the new Wave menu. So if you install the LCA Wave extension, it creates a couple items in there, like create a new LCA event planning wave. And then most people put their stuff in the toolbar so that you have a little icon there that you can press to add on the robot, insert your gadget, etc. Yep, there you go, exactly. Are you going back to my zone?
No.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
and
sorry.
There, those. I have a lot of extensions installed, so you can see I have quite a few toolbar icons, and we'll work on sorting those out more. So it's the new Wave hook, the toolbar hook. And then, so this one in particular, its action is that it annotates the selection and then it adds on the robot. So it says, all right, this selection now has this key. I'm going to add on the robot. The robot finds the key in the annotations and then acts accordingly. Most of them usually just add participant or insert gadget. Those are the two kind of basic things, is to add the robot and insert the gadget. But we'll start getting more and more stuff in this extension installer. So stuff like the regex hook. Or being able to insert other stuff. So I'll show you what this actually looks like when you add it on. I'll just do it a normal new way. Okay, so when I actually add this installer, and this is the way that extensions get shared, you're not really supposed to be telling people to insert this gadget by XML, that's not really user-friendly, or add a robot by this address. What you're supposed to do is share this installer with them, a Wave with this installer, right? If I wanted to say, oh my gosh, Dan, this is like the best extension ever. So I add him on there, he now can click install, that goes and puts it on there, and now I will have the Wave linker as an icon on my toolbar, if my toolbar could actually fit all the massive amount of stuff I have. It's right here. So now, I'm going to say, oh my gosh.
We've been scaling the back end, not so much the UI.
Yeah. All right, I'll go and add this, and then there we go. Magic. What's the first result for Wave? Wow. That's cool. I didn't know the first result for Wave was Wave. Look, we can scale the UI. All right. So that's the installer. An example of it. There's
most really awesome.
Yeah. Question?
Okay, fine. It was a stupid question. I was just looking at Zork, and I was wondering for things where, say, the game doesn't persist, given that you can do your immediate conversations or you can come back months later. So for something like Zork, would you be saving state and then restarting it within the waves?
Yeah.
Or do you replay the whole thing from scratch over again? And is there a particular policy, not policy, but recommended way of doing that sort of thing?
I think you would save the state, right? I would think of that, that wave is the Zork game, and the current state of that wave is that I'm at this location, right? And so at any time I go back, like, I should be able to go to that Zork wave right now and open the door or whatever, and it should be where I was before. I think you'd be saving. I didn't look to see how he's saving that. state exactly. I think you could just have a data document that said current Zork location equals blah, and base it on that. That would probably be the best way. Because if I wanted to create a new one, I would just create a new wave and start from scratch again. Cool. I'm not done.
No, we should. Show extension
gallery. Okay, I wasn't sure if you wanted to show it. All right. So what we're working on right now is making extensions more discoverable, because you know people have actually started making some really cool extensions that actually do make the Wave experience, a lot cooler. Like to me, Wave would be nothing without extensions. That's my personal view. But so we want to show these off and help users find them, because it's always really, a hard problem to show users how to extend the experience for a particular product. So what we've done is added an extensions link in a navigation panel here.
What we will be doing.
Well, so what we've done for a percentage of users, and one of you could be the lucky one. I made sure I was one of the lucky ones. It's great how luck works like that. Right, so what you get is a bunch of results that are extensions. We've got about 12 of them right now. So you can have a gadget that helps you order takeout food. You can have, this is the simplest one in the world, to highlight stuff in yellow. There's a trip planner, video chat, mind map is a really cool one for making collaborative diagrams.
Which looks nothing like the icon.
Yeah, I don't know what the characters are there for. Napkin gadget is for doodling. So there's about 12 in there right now. We're going to be expanding these and also just having a way to browse all of the extensions that have been submitted. Right now, these are kind of just the featured ones so that users see the ones that we really think are kind of wavy and polished. And we'll be expanding this gallery to have stuff like ratings and reviews and all of that good gallery stuff.
It'll be an iterative process. This is the first stage. We will add more as we go.
But the way to get featured is to be wavy. And now you know how to be wavy. I've given you all the secrets. But the thing is, it's not, you can always make an extension that's just for your particular use. It doesn't have to go in the gallery, right? If you're working with a team, you may make a particular extension that's just targeted for that team. I have quite a few robots that I just share with my other colleagues on developer relations. We use it for, bug triaging and stuff like that. And it's not something that necessarily the rest of the world No, so you can always share these extensions without being a part of the gallery. That's more consumer stuff. Okay?
So we have about 10 minutes left until the next coffee break. So I thought what might make a good 10-minute discussion is just thinking about what extensions people want to see to Google Wave. And things either you're excited to build or not build yourself, just we could start maybe a quick running list. Scrabble.
So, okay, so let me tell you about that.
I don't think she's built it yet, but
no,
who knows?
No, but there's such... Okay, so the guy who made the Game of Life, he also made this thing called the Cards Gadget, which is this really... It doesn't enforce any rules. It's simply a lot of cards that you can create decks of. You can move them around, you can flip them, you can peek them, etc. And it's really slick looking. You've got user carrots and positions and all that good weighty stuff. What he's working on is, he's working on two things. One of them, just making it so it has a rule, like a solitaire deck. The other thing he's working on is making it so you can customize the decks. Because if you can customize these decks, so basically you just say you have a format that specifies a generic two-sided thing, right? And so you say, all right, I'm going to have this many A's and B's and C's. So that is specifically with Scrabble in mind, because... with the, you can basically be able to make Scrabble with the customization of the deck. So this thing is pretty cool. You can go, all right, I'm going to select this, and if you're looking at the same time. So you can imagine this, but with Scrabble tiles instead of cards. But you can make it yourself as well. I'm just saying. And this one. So we have Scrabble. Oh, yeah, please never name anything after what you made it off of. Also, I guess don't say that it doesn't. Okay.
So, other things to build without going down further that thread of conversation. What's that? Language translation. Yes, Rosie was definitely something we demoed back at Google I.O. that we all love and want to ship for real instead of ship for demo. So Rosie will be coming. I didn't hear the... I don't know what that...
Switching things over is... Rewriting things into Hebrew script, Cyrillic, kanji.
There's a, so there's a kanji robot, which is you type the like lettered versions. Yeah, you type the letter versions, and then that converts it into the kanji script. So one of the... That's in the samples gallery. One of the authors wrote that. I think I've seen a Cyrillic one as well.
Yeah, sometimes you can't just do it as character set translation. Is transforming orthography sometimes has to be able to look into the structure of the word as well. Yeah.
More things people definitely want to build or would love to see, like workflow things for like jobs that we might have instead of just games. I don't know.
Just in general, integration with other collaboration platforms. I mean, one of the big things that I noticed was just I didn't see a good way to be notified that someone had updated a wave. And if I'm not visiting a wave every single day and, you know, my workflow, for like many people, is my inbox, right? If it doesn't show up in my inbox, it doesn't exist. And Wave is just so far out there that, you know, I sort of had my Wave account and then I never looked at it again. And that's sort of a danger.
The trouble tracker? So a general extension that helps you manage your like consulting business in effect. So, quick show of hands, who's seen the Salesforce video of the integration they did with Google Wave? One person? Shane, do you want to pull that? Yeah, Shane, you don't count. So, one of the things that I realized we didn't talk about at all in this entire extensions presentation is the other embed, the other API we have, which is embed. The ability just to drop a couple lines of JavaScript into your web page and get the Wave collaborative experience. It's certainly interesting. Obviously, without having complete open access and Google Wave accounts, embed is sort of harder to roll out in places where you can't control who has accounts at this stage. But we are working on being able to make those waves anonymously read, so you don't have to be logged into Google Wave. But that's not something we've shipped at this stage. But the embed API is quite interesting, and you're going to see that. Oh, you're not pulling up the Salesforce thing?
Oh, I was writing some kanji. You know how it is.
It's not Salesforce. featured extensions, just Wave featured extensions.
I forgot it was on that page.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't mention embed because it's one line of code that once you want to use embed, it's fairly obvious what to do.
Yeah. It's useful to know that it exists.
Yeah, yep.
So Salesforce.
SAD? Oh, you want to? Oh, right.
That's what we were just talking about.
I was writing kanji. So.
You need to scroll down.
Let me plug in the audio.
Force.com's business apps on the Force.com platform. Let's have a look at the types of powerful things you can create to help run a business by combining Google Wave and Salesforce.com's business apps on the Force.com platform. In this example, we'll look at a mobile phone provider called Booyah Mobile. Booyah uses Salesforce's Service Cloud to manage its customer service. And to connect its customers that need help to the Service Cloud, it's created a robot. So for Booyah's customers that use Wave, getting help is as easy as starting a conversation. Because the robot is connected to the Service Cloud, it has access to this customer's info, like which phone he has, and it can provide him with personalized service. After he's indicated that he has issues with his phone, the robot goes and checks and tells him whether or not there are any known issues at the moment. If there are, he can stop trying to get his phone fixed. In this case, there aren't, and the robot asks him to explain what's wrong. He explains the problem that he's having right there in the Wave. and the robot picks up his reply and immediately responds by searching for relevant help articles in the service cloud. Great! The robot found a few articles, and it renders them in a gadget for him to browse right inside the wave. If one of these articles has what he needs, he can let Booyah know, and he's done. But let's say he doesn't find what he needs. He can go ask the robot to initiate a conversation with a live support agent, and the robot goes out, finds one, and invites him to chat. This customer just went from interacting with a robot to chatting with a live agent, and it's all completely seamless because everything happened in a wave. Now let's go to the service cloud to see what the agent sees. This is the case record that was assigned to the agent. While the robot was helping the customer, it used Force.com's APIs to create this record and keep it updated. It also embedded the wave right on the record. The agent can now use all the tools he has in the service cloud while he chats with the customer in the wave. If he needs to, he can also start new private discussions with other employees in the same wave. Even if it goes on for days, the agent and the customer can continue to use this same wave to correspond. You just saw some powerful ways to use waves with Salesforce.com. Be sure to check us out on the web and you can start building your own.
So that was an extension they built. They've actually open sourced that code as well. So it's really just a prototype, but it does touch all three of the APIs that Google Wave offers. So the robot that actually manages everything, and then the gadget gets dropped in and then embed in their CRM.
Yeah, that's true. Once you make a Wave extension, then you can set it.
So in terms of an issue tracker, like this could be one way to integrate with an issue tracker, but there are certainly others as well.
Yeah, we'll be open sourcing an issue tracker bot shortly. Buggy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we have one that uses the issue tracker, the Google Code Project Hosting Issue Tracker data API. It's an Atom Pub API, and basically create a new wave, you have the bot, and everything back and forth to the comments on the issue tracker. There's a lot of, and I also have the other one I'm working on, which is my issue triaging bot, which brings the issues in and then makes it easy to triage the new issues that have come in the last few days.
It doesn't make decisions yet, though.
No, there's still humans involved. Yeah, so I think, so with version control systems, there's a couple things, you could be doing. I think one thing, like if you have a version control system, you don't want to commit every document change to it because you're potentially committing like code, stuff like that, and it's potentially a lot of revisions. If I was going to do a version control bot, I'd probably have a few robots to do pre-submit or pre-commit checking, right? So do a compiling bot, there's like four of those. Yeah, you want some hooks to make sure everything's good. I think there's a lot of potential for that because there's Bestman, which is collaborative coding. But there's something cool about the fact in Wave that you could have conversations around that code, right, and make it really easy to discuss a particular bit of code and then only export the actual code that's underneath it. And my friend just wrote a robot 2 days ago that uses Codeling. You guys know Code? I think it's called Codeling. But basically, it's a site that will compile code that you paste into a text box into like 30 languages, something like that. And right now, his robot is basically scraping the site, but the guy who wrote the site says he'll make an API so that the robot can use it. So that means that he'll write a robot that can potentially compile code into something like 30 languages, right? And he's going to integrate it with the selection flow so you can just select and compile and stuff like that. So a huge amount of potential there. There's also Python evaluators, Clojure evaluators, and stuff like that. I haven't actually seen something that hooks into a version control system yet. I think that's what you should do. Yeah, I haven't figured out how to do a commit from App Engine. It's probably not hard, but I'm not sure how you would trigger that. But.
So we're getting some hand signals that it's time for the afternoon tea break. There are two more demos that are up there. One is a prototype of doing an extension with MediaWiki. So being able to use Wave as a collaborative experience for updating Wikipedia would be pretty cool. And that's what one of the videos is about. Well, let's not show that right now. I want to let people go to the thing. But there's also another video of SAP. They built a workflow, sort of a business process modeling extension, which is also quite nice. But we will reconvene here at 3:45, and Sam will talk to us about defining Web 2.1, or maybe we won't use that as the actual title for it. But
yeah, last year, Webstock, Bruce Sterling gave an entire spiel about Web 2.1. It's great. He basically said it was that.